Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the weekly show from the Bagel Tech Network, which summarises the entire week in technology. And actually, for once, we're back on a Friday. So the entire week has already gone by, which is really cool, because actually, this week's actually not been bad for tech news. We've had a fair old bit. Joining me to rake through the trouble that has been this week's technology news is the usual brilliant panel. Top left, back from his self-imposed absence, James Hart.
Hello, mate. It's not been pretty, Ewan. It's not been pretty at
all. It's not. Not as pretty as that dado rail with an RJ45 connector on it.
Do you know, before the show, you said, are you on Wi-Fi? I said, yes. And then I said, right, I plug the cable from the Mac into one of these sockets behind me. And then I realised I'm not on the wire. So I've had a longer cable to run to the other end of the studio.
I have no idea what you've just said.
No.
James, are you swearing every other word and actually kind of lowering your levels? Because that's what it sounds like.
Has it started doing it again?
Yeah, mate. We got hardly any of that.
Gesticulating, I think.
We just sit still, yes. Keep the hands still. No jazz hands, dude.
Yeah, it's all to do with the Cat 5. I didn't bother to wire it up.
Right, okay. You've got to have to do that. Definitely. Job for the weekend, then. Next to him, Mr. Steve Neighbour. Hello, mate.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. How was... you've got a walk this weekend or something, haven't you? Or?
Oh, yeah, we have tomorrow. In Victoria area in London, we've got Bagel Tech photo and an ale mug photo walk.
Now
I heard running into the pub every so often.
Exactly. I heard it was a tad more Westminster.
Is it?
I heard it was...
Oh, I better go to the right location.
Yeah, exactly. I'd double-check that with Carl if I were you. But
It's all details on the ale mug website and... on the Facebook as well. So
providing you're not arrested for using long lenses,
yep,
you'll be fine and dandy. And yep. Carl's with you, but Carl and Alex are coming up to the thing for Will Green tomorrow at Ironbridge.
Ooh, are they?
Yeah, the Ironbridge party, mate. We've got a get together, free beer and curry and all sorts going on. So there's bound to be you might have to sit in the back of Carl's van, but there you go. It could be a Silence of the Lambs type experience, perhaps, for you, but yeah. Who knows?
Yes.
Anything,
that sounds good.
Beneath him, I confess I'm a geek, David Dean. How you doing, pal?
Hello, I'm good, thank you.
Long time? A couple of weeks,
I think, yeah.
Yeah,
a couple of weeks.
Busy couple of weeks.
Yep.
What you been up to?
Oh, bought a new phone, got a Samsung Galaxy S2. There it is.
And you've admitted it?
I have, but I kept the iPhone as well, so...
Right, so and which one's winning at the moment?
Samsung Galaxy's nice because it's new, big screen, but the iPhone 4S is my dependable, app-filled bit of loveliness.
Oh, so it's still not wrenched you away yet, even with the big screen, because the big screen is pretty impressive.
Yeah, if the iPhone 4S or the next iPhone has a big screen, then it's no contest.
Right. So what about weight, though, as well? Because the one thing I noticed with the S2 is it is light.
It's light and thin, but it feels cheap because of it.
Oh, I didn't get that. All right. Okay. I just thought it was light and enjoyable.
It's all right. It's nice and light, yeah. Yeah, it's fine.
In a being a girly kind of way. And next to him, from California, bright and sunny, Mr. Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, pal. You?
Good, good.
Decent
I just
week?
Looked at. I promise I'm getting a haircut later today. My hair no longer even fits on the screen, so there you go.
No. I'm growing mine. My hair is getting longer and longer and longer, and I'm doing absolutely nothing to cut it back. It's pissing the wife off immensely, which is why I'm letting it grow.
Bagel Tech mullet.
No. The back short. I'm not having the long mullet. Not doing that. Not a chance. The week in technology. Absolutely fantastic week. Just recently, Motorola has been issued a victory in its need to call an injunction against Apple for sales of iPhone. It's to do with iPhones and 3G-equipped iPads. but it could sell a real problem for EU. James Dyson has called out the Chinese for ripping off his patented stuff and them not paying the fines and carrying on making it anyway. I've got no idea why, because most of his stuff doesn't actually do what it says on the tin anyway. That fan that he sat there holding on to, I stood next to one of those in the shop. And
did you get buffeted?
I wasn't sure it was even on. It was crap. The iPlayer, good one for you, Eric. The iPlayer is coming in iPhone and iPod Touch format for you. So if you subscribe, then you'll be able to get it on those little tiny devices. Won't that be stunning for you?
The US?
In the US, international.
How much will that be, Ewan? How much are they going to charge?
It's in your package, apparently. If you subscribed, then you'll be able to use the iPhone and iPod Touch applications.
Subscribe to what? BBC?
Yeah, no, you've got BBC Global now, haven't you? You can subscribe to in the States. And that gets you iPlayer.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yes.
So if I wanted to, I could watch this stuff on their website.
Yeah, yeah. If you're subscribed, you're in, mate. You've got iPlayer access just like the rest of us, except we get it free.
And is it on demand? To learn British culture.
There you go. Is it on demand or is it only live?
No, it's on demand. It's iPlayer is a download as you go service. And if you go to Get iPlayer Automata and get your proxy serving services sorted out, you can get it free anyway, so don't worry. But it's coming, and it's thanks to the way that the BBC is uniquely funded, of course.
Mm. And we got Sky on the Xbox this week.
Really?
Mm.
I didn't know that.
I haven't got Sky, but my mother has. So I can get Sky
on Xbox.
I thought you were going to say, I that's what I thought. I thought he was going to say, I haven't got an Xbox, but my mom has.
Does your mum want to join my Modern Warfare 3 clan?
No, she knows what that is.
She'd kick your ass, Steve. You're crap.
So I've
borrowed a Sky account and I could get Sky on my Xbox now.
The Nokia Lumia 710 came out, which is a Windows Phone 7 phone thing, and it looks more like a life preserver of some description that inflates when it hits the water. Trumpton strings to mind when you read this thing. It's not the best looking iPhone. Verizon's banned Google Wallet as well, as because they want it to be a better experience. And if you wanted the first device out of the Grand Central Terminus Apple Store, there's a bit of a queue, unfortunately.
I'd hate to be the guy trying to find my train.
I've got to say, that's the one thing that as soon as I saw that picture, it was like, there is a dude in there who is looking for his train with 2 minutes to go. He's got the 5:45 on the way out to Brooklyn, and he is really pissed.
What the hell's going on there?
That's the opening.
I don't want to die, my dad. I just want to go home.
That is the opening of Grand Central Terminus Apple Store.
They're all in red shirts there, aren't they?
Well, the red shirts are the staff. So everyone else is punter.
I was going to say, the ones in the red shirts normally get killed, don't they?
Yes.
Excuse me, I need to get my train. Bugger off, I need to get my iPad too.
Oh, to be honest with you, I've been at St. Pancras where all the trains have been cancelled, it looks like that. Mm.
How does that not violate every fire safety code on the book?
Because there's plenty of space above them.
iOS products don't catch fire, do they?
If you have a look at that,
you're right, James. That's what they should have done. They should have just brought an elevated platform, and then everyone could have just made a second layer above that. And
yeah,
let the passengers go underneath.
Mezzanine wouldn't have spoiled the look at all, would it? No.
Oh, hardly.
If you ever get bored and you want to have a look at that photo, rather than playing Where's Wally, you can play Where's Martin Bell. If you look at it, you'll see him eventually.
Oh yeah,
Martin Bell just
in his cream suit.
Is a cream suit political? Is he still a MP?
Is he there though?
Is he at the front?
Yeah,
front center,
right in the middle, front and center.
Is that really Martin Bell? Are you taking the piss?
No, it is Martin Bell.
It does look like him. I have to agree. oh, never mind. The Swiss government have said it's okay to rip off stuff over copyrighted downloaded content because they don't think it does that much harm anyway. Well done. Ultraviolet's coming to the UK on Boxing Day, and their opening film is that well-known classic, Final Destination 5, which is stunning. The other thing that came out, I've got absolutely no idea why this has got anything to do with tech, But I was looking for another story, which is the next one I'm going to show you. And I found this picture of Sean Penn and Dennis Quaid. And I just looked at it, and it was something to do with the UNICEF ball. And I'm not sure whether Dennis Quaid wants to kiss Sean Young and shag him, or whether he wants to stab him between the shoulder blades. But I just thought it was an interesting picture. There we go. And the last one is number 11 in this year's Facebook Stories of the Year. The picture that you're looking at is Olga Zajac. She's 28, and she was robbed by 32-year-old would-be robber Viktor Jasinski. Unfortunately for Viktor, Olga is a black belt in karate, so she floored him with one kick in the middle of her salon, dragged him downstairs into the cellar and stripped him naked, tied him to a radiator, and force-fed him Viagra and used him as a sex slave for 3 days before releasing him to the police. When the police came and arrested Olga, she said, "What a bastard. Yes, we had sex a couple of times, but I bought him some new jeans, gave him some food, and I even gave him 1,000 rubles when he left." There you go. And that is my story of the year, despite the fact it's only number 11 on the list. Without a doubt, the story of the year.
Do you know what salon she works?
Well, my hair's getting a bit long.
Booking a flight over there.
Olga, cut my hair for free or else.
I reckon Carl could find a new girlfriend.
He's just had his hair cut, though. It's always really well kept now. He's obviously trying very hard to get a girl, isn't he?
Sexual.
I know you're in the chat room, Carl, so do apologise. The week in technology. The other thing that happened as well was WebOS has been thrown out to open source. And I thought that was quite an interesting move, because with Meg taking over and that kind of stuff, there was a bit of uncertainty about what was going to happen to it. I'm sure John Rubenstein's not particularly happy. But Carl's just said buggers in the chat room, by the way. But WebOS going open source, I mean, is this really significant? Or is this just those, you know, they might as well have thrown it in the bin?
I think
it's
brilliant.
What are they going to do with it? What is anybody going to do with it? It's
polish it, put it on the mantelpiece.
You know, but it's very open source. You can do what you like with it.
But
that's it. What are you going to do? No.
Well, do we know whether they're retaining any kind of copyright or ownership over the code, or is it completely now open source?
It, from what I've read, that's it. It's everything.
Because according to a headline I saw on Ars Technica, that could mean that it is now more open source than Android. Because Android, of course, is open source by name, but the code is entirely controlled by Google. You can't develop it outside of Google unless you intend to fork it and never contribute back to the source project. So maybe this could be the open source operating system that Linux fans and Migo fans have been clamoring for years. Who knows?
Mm.
There's a quote here that's saying that HP will continue to invest in the project. So they're still going to push it. They're not just releasing it and
how will they invest in it if they're not making anything?
Maybe they've got a secret source, a secret strategy to make it all work.
Well, they'll probably invest as in we'll provide programmers, developers who were there at the start. And the source code will be maintained, if you like, a la Linux-y kind of esque type stuff.
But there's only a finite amount of hardware, isn't there? So
exactly.
Will that mean that WebOS then will be able to work on different hardware?
This was always the thing, though, wasn't it, with WebOS, is it was this opportunity, because HP had got such a hold in the hardware market, they had this opportunity to take WebOS and for it to be the continuous operating system that went from desktop to tablet to phone and back again, and they never actually did it. But, I mean, if that clearly was a vision at some point, which it clearly was, I think, the way that we were talking before Apotheca went, WebOS is perfectly able to run on standard Windows-esque desktop machines, no?
Well, this is it. What I'm towards. Who
keep the hand still, dude. Keep the hand still.
Sorry. Who's going to take this on? Is it going to be the enthusiasts, or is it going to be Chinese manufacturers who went into the market with a product and they want to subscribe to Android? They want to use Windows, and they have this platform, which has been practically built for them. It's going to be something new, I think. Potentially.
I think it'll be like Linux has gone. It'll just, it'll be, particularly with Windows 8 coming out, which will be a touch face design on Windows 8. it will be an alternative to that. Just maybe that Linux won't move that quickly towards a touch-face interface.
Yeah, I can't see it going anywhere. I mean, you've got Chrome OS. You've got, I mean, there's enough cheap Android tablets out now, including the Fire. So I can't see where it's going to go without the infrastructure. That will never happen.
Mm.
I guess people who are, you know, the true open source diehard fans who are concerned that the Android, you know, really isn't open source by most people's definitions, I guess it at least provides a sort of a fallback position. And maybe some people who are extremely ideological about this may, in fact, start developing for it instead of Android. I guess we'll have to see.
But that's just the point, though, isn't it? That's just the point. It's going to be the idea. It's going to be the extremist. It's going to be the extremist operating system.
Well, I was just about to say, I mean, why on earth? What's the incentive to develop for WebOS now?
Enthusiasm.
It would be specifically if you don't like Android, but there's already a precedent for that kind of thing. I mean, really, I think a lot of people would tell you the reason to get Android is if you don't like iOS. It's sort of like you start with that, and then you go the more restrictions there are that you dislike, the more you go to an alternative. If iOS is too restrictive, you go to Android. If Android's too restrictive, you go to, I guess, now WebOS.
I mean, I got a bit of stick the other week for going on about the fact the brand loyalty towards Android, because it's a happen chance OS as opposed to a purpose purchased OS. I mean, WebOS has either got to take that niche and be something which has got brand specific loyalty, otherwise, because if you're relying on it being shoved into someone's hand like Android. There is no hardware there, as Dave says. There is absolutely nothing to force this onto the consumer. So why on earth would anyone have it? I mean, is this Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, you know, the computer club, the garage crew, the
homebrew
people? Yeah.
Do people still do that though?
I don't think so. That's why it's going to die a death. I mean,
do you know what this is like? It's like when you go to a country you're never going to go back to, and you've got you've got their currency in your pocket. And before you leave the country, what do you do with it? Ignoring the right thing to do, obviously, put it in the airport, the airliner's charity bag. But if mm-hmm. you just want to blow it, just blow it. I think HP have got to do something. They've just thrown the dice and said, right, let's go down this strategy because it wasn't working what we were doing. So let's just get rid of it while we can.
But they're still putting money into it. They're still prepared to support it and invest it.
Yeah, that's weird. That sounds just completely stupid. I mean, that's
if you're going to open source something,
that's the point of open sourcing something is so you can walk away and not keep pouring money into it.
But maybe they've got the hardware that they're going to put this open source. I don't know. It's hard.
Printers. Well, they have that printer, didn't they, with a screen on it that ran some sort of WebOS.
This is it, and Streak Machine in the chat room has just said the point I was going to make. Robert, you're absolutely right. What the hell are HP doing? We don't know what their game plan is. They're coming out with these crazy things. We just go, what?
I suspect there's no plan at all, actually. I suspect this is a matter of just hedging their bets. They don't have any current plans to use WebOS. They really have no idea on the horizon. They may have a few nebulous thoughts like, well, if open source people can evolve it along a certain path of development, then maybe in 5 years' time we might have a use for it with a new direction of the company. Who knows? But I think this may just be they don't want to give it away. They also don't want to let it stagnate. So they're going to let other people have a go at it. And they're going to, you know, fund it, I guess. Maybe in name only. We'll see. Did they commit to a specific dollar amount?
No. I mean, all you've got here is a memo from Meg Whitman. But, I mean, I'm just reading through it, and it says, since we announced the discontinuation of the WebOS devices last August, the executive team's been working to determine the best path forward for the highly respected software. Well, no one's going to disagree with that. We looked at all the options in the market today, and we see a clear need for a platform that is both open and has a single integrated stack. What's a single integrated stack, people?
Linux.
I don't know.
That's one of those words that's been coming up a lot lately, stack. It's like a new software and web software specifically buzzword, because I looked it up, you know, I forget when, it might have been a few months ago. And basically the concept's always been around. You haven't heard people use the word stack. And I think usually what people refer to by stack is sort of what comes bundled into an operating system. You just expect that a certain stack, meaning a bundle of tightly integrated software, would be included as a single suite or a single core. It's sort of like a software suite that's at a very core, low operating system level, I think.
I think, just looking at HP performance as a company, and I am blown away at the last few years' worth of their share price, if I'm reading these charts right, because you would have thought it would have tanked, but it doesn't look too bad.
Well, I think the thing you've got to bear in mind with web, not with OS, with HP, is the fact that although there was an announcement they were walking away from a highly lucrative business in terms of the desktop market, they haven't done it. And there's been no date set when they were going to do it. So the stock market would react to a precipitation of impending failure, which they're not going to get. I mean, they're down, but
yeah,
I mean...
Yeah, they have tanked a bit.
They tanked a bit.
Well, five years ago, they were 40. Just looking at the graph here. 5 years ago, they were 40.
Yeah.
And now they are 27. You would have thought 5 years ago, they were number one computer seller. iPad didn't exist. You would have thought they would.
Well,
have.
I mean,
they still make decent stuff, don't they? To be honest,
exactly. It's an okay. I mean, I've got an HP Pavilion that I use as a footrest, and it's perfectly sound.
Good service, Proliant servers on offer at the moment. I think $180 or something.
You'll miss that, but never mind.
That they're showing that shows their. That I would be concerned at the moment is their strategy for what heck they're doing. And that's the bit that I would have thought would drive their price down, even though, you know, they've got cash cow products, etc.
But in what you're saying, Steve, I mean, you said, you know, go back to the share price, it was at $40 a share prior to the iPad. Well, you would have probably looked at their share price and said, well, it's no surprise it's down at 28 now, because since it came out, you've got iPhone, iPad, you've got them purchasing a company, a lock, stock and barrel in Palm. And then absolutely taking nothing from that apart from the patents. And, oh, hang on a minute, the stock market will sit and think perhaps there's money in the patents and that type of stuff. And they've announced lots and lots of stuff, but the guy that came out that clearly needed shooting in the corner was, with the Pearland revolver and a glass of whiskey was Apotheker. He's now been shoved sideways. Got Meg in. Meg's a well-respected woman. And she's done nothing wrong so far. She's not done anything particularly at all. But... throwing WebOS out to open source and then saying you're going to support it, just unless it's a dwindling intervention,
I just had a thought, and I'm actually trying to look it up, and maybe it seems like something I should know, so if you guys know, please jump in and correct me. But what happens when you open source something that has over 2,000 patents associated with it and under ownership of that particular company?
Are you saying WebOS has got 2,000 patents associated with it?
Yeah, that's what I just read in a little headline search, as I was trying to find what happens to the patents. Because I imagine, because think about it, what people were saying they should do is sell off WebOS and you know, harvest the patents for cash. So I imagine that by open sourcing it, they're not just giving away the patents for free, because that was their biggest source of trying to, you know, that'd be their biggest way to recoup the lost money. So I wonder what happens. I wonder if that is a powerful disincentive for people to develop with it open source if the patents are entirely owned by HP.
Well, they would retain the patents, and if that's the case, then the fact would be that anyone who developed anything would be giving a proportion of what they developed back to HP. So are they saying that they're throwing it out there on the basis that they're hoping that people will do something, because then they'll cream royalties off the top of that?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking. Like, is that what usually
happens? Well, that's all I could think of. But, I mean, I can't see that as being a lucrative market that you'd want to invest in.
So maybe in the license agreement that makes it open source, they give specific royalty-free, unlimited use license for people to use but not own or redistribute the patents, I guess.
No, but every time, if you've got something that's like, oh, no, because I'm trying to think about the Google model, because the Google model doesn't have anything where it gets a revenue stream back inwardly through the use of the software.
No, they have the load of underneath, under the bonnet that they use, the stuff that was revealed over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
They're tracking stuff and they're doing stuff and they're... HP got nothing. There is no profit.
There is nothing. Yeah,
for HP, and there's no incentive for people to do anything with it. It just makes no sense. Cool. If you consider what Microsoft are trying to do with Nokia and the struggle they're having with an established brand making phones and an established brand making operating systems, and even that's not working. HP going, we'll never go on this. It's just a bit half-witted to me. I mean, I don't want to get in trouble with anyone from HP, and if they'd like to explain what exactly they're thinking, I'd be very pleased to listen to them.
Oh, here we go, by the way. I just found an article. For those of you curious, there's already an article that was published like 30 minutes ago. It's called on ZDNet. It's called HP's WebOS plan modeled after Red Hat's Fedora. And it does say that HP will retain ownership of the patents.
Mm. Cool.
Well, unless they're selling them, they can't not. Just by going open source, they wouldn't be giving them away.
I have to say that the point of Red Hat Fedora, though, is that's the customer end of got the Red Hat Enterprise stuff, which is stuff which is paid for, developed, supported, and that's there is a support and a capital model. There's a revenue model to that. For HP, I don't understand any of this.
James, are you watching our feedback on Ustream, by the way?
No, I don't think. Why?
Oh, I just thought that might be slowing your video down a bit, that's all. But
No, just crap connection.
Incidentally, it says here that the following the Fedora model of business plan licensing for this open source is one of the goals is to prevent forking. Interestingly, that's not the goal of Android. Android encourages new forks, so that could be a principal difference there.
Forking mess. There we go. That's the title.
Okay, very good. Could HP change their mind down the line and revoke it?
I doubt it, because once the source code's out there, you're stuffed. Mm. I mean, that's it. Source code is source code. Mm.
Yeah, I imagine there's some kind of precedent that you can't just reclose the source and then sue everybody.
Well, if they've got no control over it, how can they stop it being forked?
Mm.
I don't understand. Well,
licensing, you can make requirements. I'm just brainstorming, but I'm sure you can make requirements to feed all code back into the original source project or something like that.
But if it's if the source goes out there can't be a license.
I was going to say is that the print. Open source.
I mean, you've got Eve, what's his name? Eve Butt or Eve Arse, the French bloke, who said you cannot copyright open source software. It physically cannot be done, and he sits on the European Law Lords.
Moreover, you cannot charge for something which uses the open source software. If that component device is eventually licensed, because that goes against the open source principles.
You've also got the issue of the fact that if you have a patent which you do not enforce the ownership of, you lose the right to the patent as well as. So, I mean, there's a feasibility here that if there's a patent that's being issued associated with the open source handout, then if it's clear what the patent is and they never enforce the ownership of that, they lose it.
I'm kind of listening to this, but I'm just enjoying James's audio kicking out every so often while he's talking about forking. It sounds really good.
Well, basically, just you were saying that you can't retain a copyright over open source software. I think you can. There are many different flavors of open source. I think the most liberal is like the GPL and the totally free, Free Software Foundation, that kind of thing. This is actually under an Apache license, which I recall reading before is more restrictive. And that's, according to this ZDNet article, that is the reason they're doing that.
Well, Eve Bott was the guy, and it was, I read it out on last week, I think, on BagelTech News. Copyright cannot protect software and functionality. And this was US computer software company SAS Institute cannot claim copyright protection for functions performed by its programs that have been replicated by a rival. And this guy is an advisor to the European Court, and he's saying that effectively if the source code is out there, you cannot enforce copyright on anything that anything does. There is no availability for it because you've lost total control of it. And the key issue with that with patents is if you don't enforce the patent, so if someone uses it and you fail to enforce an application against them for misuse, you lose the right to hold that patent.
Hence the Samsung-Apple battle at the moment.
Yeah. I think this is a can of worms, but I can't believe that Meg's... I mean, this girl's she's a tried and tested CEO. She's not a dumb blonde. She knows what she's doing. And
she bought Skype when she was at eBay, didn't she?
But there's a bit of this sounds like baby with the bathwater that I can't fathom. I think that's the key part. We've sat and discussed around this now for 15 minutes, but at no point have we come to anything where we thought, oh, okay, that would be a logical conclusion. It's all. that just doesn't sound right. And none of this sounds right.
It's the best logic I've heard about why they're doing it.
What, because it doesn't sound right?
No,
because do they want to get a hobby generation going and sort of people sort of getting into the HP brand by using WebOS and sort of coming up with fantastic software for things they
may invent down the line.
It's nothing like what HP normally does.
It's almost the opposite, isn't it?
I mean, they're all about control. Absolutely all about control. So none of this seems right. None at all. We get to do some Apple stuff because the Mac show's gone. So if we haven't discussed it already, then tough. Apple have named Instagram as the application of the year.
Good heavens.
Never used it.
Oh, that's the end of that story then.
I'm surprised by that as well.
Every picture I've ever seen on Instagram looks like it was taken in the 1970s.
With a toy camera zone mode.
Yeah. With the sun in the lens.
I've given old Analog App a good kicking over their filters because they look really awful and they add noise to images. But this thing, I don't get why it's so successful, to be honest. When you've got a Flickr application that takes the raw image that you've shot that looks beautiful on your iPhone, you know, that's what I looked at, this is what it is, and posts it up directly, why would you want to shove it through a series of shockingly bad filters? Thank you, mate. Eric, you're young. We're not. We're old. Being a young, thrusting thing, would Instagram appeal to you, or don't you post?
Oh, no, I never tried Instagram, because, I mean, I think it only works with other iPhone users, for one thing, right?
You're old before your years.
What?
You're old before your years.
I believe, I've seen so many pictures posted on Twitter from Instagram.
Yeah.
There's a lot. True. I mean, there's an awful lot of pictures. I mean, Instagram is, I think, probably extremely popular, doesn't even begin to, you know, cover it.
I wouldn't be surprised if they've gone with that company because they know it's not purchasable or somebody else can't. They've got their claws into it already and it's just self-promotion in some way. I'd be surprised if, you know, they're clever in who they promote.
Well, it's an iPhone application for a start. And the iPhone application...
It doesn't seem the obvious one that you would say is the best app.
No, I think there's an awful lot more. Twitter.
Lots more.
But you know, the homegrown Twitter application would be better, but they haven't said that, not at all.
Yeah, Flipboard looks good.
Zite, another one. I mean, Flipboard's crashed, hasn't it? Because it's
is it?
Yeah, Flipboard has crashed entirely today because they had something stupid like 90,000 hits to the server a minute.
Oh, because of the iPhone app.
Yeah, and it's just it's awful. It's fallen to pieces. So.
How can they miss out Zara and Sir, the cards app? That's the best thing that's happened this year. Tell you what.
Your mother, how many cards have you got off your mum since that started, mate?
27
cards. What a beautiful and gorgeous thing that is.
My mum?
No, the cards application, of course.
Oh, okay.
No, not that your mother's... No, that's not what I'm saying.
No, sorry.
Let's leave mothers out of it, shall we?
Okay.
Nokia Lumix 710. They've gone down in numbers because it used to be four figures and now it's only three. I mean,
you say Lumix? Isn't that a Panasonic camera?
It's
Lumiere, isn't it?
Certainly is, but this thing is called Lumia. Nokia Lumia 710. My mistake.
Fisher Price.
I mean, Nokia in the death throes here.
They come bananas just like HP. Yeah.
Do you want a phone which is white on the front and council toilet blue on the back? That's what it is.
Council toilet blue.
Is this the one that, with their first front-facing camera? Because I think the initial Windows phones didn't come out with the front-facing camera from Nokia, did they? But this one does look like it's at least got that function. Mm-hmm. The company that owns Skype.
Well, here's the thing. SIM free, €270. $332. Cheap. Which is cheap tat, nay? And it's running...
Is it the pay-as-you-go market?
And it's running the cutting-edge Windows software. Cutting-edge being inverted commas, of course.
So are they going for that middle market in terms of my, you know, 12-year-old, 15-year-old?
Well, don't forget the Metro software is now on your Xbox. Maybe they're trying to get the kids to buy it.
Is it water resistant? It sure looks like it.
Oh, man. I mean, when was the last time any of you walked into a cell phone shop and thought, oh, I'll have a look at what Nokia's got to offer?
1994.
Yeah, 3310.
Yeah.
Or the 7110, you know, the one that was in the Matrix.
Matrix phone, yeah.
For me, it was 2004. The last one I had was one that had...
You're only 11.
It had the goofy circular dial pad before. It was like a big hobbyist phone that was like expensive when it came out, and then it got very cheap, and I got one that was very cheap, and then it was just like discontinued.
In 95's value, a lot of 95.
The N95 was a very big selling phone, wasn't it? I mean, that was huge. And that had a lot of web integration. It was the benchmark of web integration. And then the iPhone was released.
Mm.
And it died to death.
Yeah. Didn't think of the hands again.
Carl in the chat room wants to know if, when it touches water, does it turn into a dinghy?
It looks like it.
I mean, N8, the Nokia N8 has got a great reputation for its 12 megapixel camera.
That's it.
But is that enough to spend 500 quid on? Sorry?
That's the keypad.
It's the one that tapers at the end, isn't it? It looks like it's it looks like it's a sonic torpedo out of Star Trek.
Lost me.
No. Okay.
Is it a BlackBerry phone?
No, it's nothing like a BlackBerry phone.
All right. Because I know that they was it the E7, the Nokia the Nokia series. I've seen
E71, E72 series.
Yeah. I've seen quite a few people with those ones.
I had an E-series phone. I think it was a 71. And it was in beige, and it was horrible, and gold thing. But I could type like the wind on it. It was like a BlackBerry. Exactly. But the OS was awful. I mean, it was not intuitive. You couldn't navigate anywhere. Smart? Hell no.
And that's why I think they got Microsoft on board, but they've completely squandered that.
I don't know.
They should be putting Skype in there and making an absolute killing, wouldn't they?
Mm.
They should be really pushing Skype.
Well, I mean, but the thing is that they got to the point where they can't take Skype away from everyone else.
How do you mean?
It's been given away for free for so long,
yeah,
and they've been living off additional phone call charges from it, that they cannot take it away from people for free.
Mm. Yeah. Even to the point where Facebook's got Skype integration now, so it's even freer kind of thing. It's part of this model of an integrated web experience.
Mm.
But I can understand the link with Skype and phones easier than the link between Xbox gaming and phones, because I think the people that are connected to each other through Xbox gaming are probably texting or BBMing each other anyway. I don't think they'll get an added market if they link it to an Xbox, linking the Xbox with the phone.
Well, hang on a second though, because you're talking about phones that are coming out with dual core processors and maybe quad core processors very soon. So you'll probably find that there are certain games, I think of things like Command and Conquer, that kind of stuff, where it's turn-based, low-end graphics, and you could physically walk into the bus, carry on playing your Xbox game on the way home, dock your phone, and your phone stops, and you start your Xbox, and you pick up where you left off from your phone game.
Well, I may be wrong with this, but I just don't see the Xbox games fitting very well with a very small screen. The complexity, the control system about the Xbox is what makes the Xbox, not the types of games that you get.
I was going to say, this is more along the lines of Sony's Xperia Play kind of stuff, where you're actually carrying your PlayStation around with you.
I mean, Eric, you're our gaming expert.
That's sad.
Based on one review.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm looking at right now. I just saw the OnLive app for iPad is now out.
Is it out now?
Yeah.
It is out. And it comes with, or you have to buy, I guess, a $50 Bluetooth controller that gives you the equivalent of like an Xbox or a PlayStation 3 controller with the full range of buttons. What I can't wait to see though is what the latency could possibly
that's
be like.
What
I
it is. How delayed is it? Because that's going to be over Wi-Fi. That's going to be woeful.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Bluetooth,
and combine that with a Bluetooth connection from the controller to the device. I wonder if that's even going to be playable.
And then AirPlay to Apple TV as well.
Oh yeah. Oh, that would kill it, wouldn't it?
Don't Sony's controllers use Bluetooth?
They do, but I don't think not to connect to the phone though. That would be just one wireless connection to set-top box, as opposed to two wireless connections or more stacked.
Stacked. There's that word again.
Yep.
The Bluetooth controller, the PS3 controllers are Bluetooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
They go straight into the machine though. But if you like you say, if you're talking about layering them. I'm not sure that would work quite so easily.
I absolutely love the concept of OnLive. It is. Yeah. It could revolutionise gaming, I think.
Yeah. I've played it on the Mac, and it's really good. Really, really good.
I agree. I love the concept. However, I very quickly, once I got an Xbox a couple of years ago, which was, I think, after OnLive had first come out, or maybe I'm getting that backwards, but I concluded that it would make no sense for an Xbox or PlayStation 3 owner to ever buy an OnLive game, because the resolution simply is lower, it's more pixelated, you get frame rate dropouts, and just having that latency is enough to really spoil certain games, especially depending on your connection. So as long as you're going to pay the same price, it's better to have it, you know, on locally running hardware, I would say.
I mean, given the amount of trouble I'm having with Skype, I'm probably screwed, but I quite like the subscription model of it. The fact that you don't have to buy a game for £60, you can chop and change. I quite like that.
Well, the phrase that's on the story for this is that the OnLive experience is there for you, providing you've got Wi-Fi and solid Wi-Fi and 3G connection. Which, if you're anything other than solid, I think you really are going to struggle with it. I mean, you're already looking at general gaming struggling through the fact that they want always on Wi-Fi and internet connectivity. Otherwise, they just won't let you play it. You know, the last Assassin's Creed and so on.
Speaking of subscriptions, that's a good point, James, because OnLive attempts to be the Netflix of video games, meaning that for back catalog stuff, for things that's about a year old or further, they do offer you unlimited play of all those games for, I think it's like $10 a month or something. It's really cheap. It's similar, very similar to Netflix, where you get a cheap price, but you get older archival stuff unlimited.
About 200 games immediately. Something like that. So, yeah.
So, and what's really cool is obviously it's the same game with in roughly the same quality, no matter what platform you play it. iPad's going to look the same as your HDTV because it's running on the same hardware, which is you can't really say about any other platform or links of platforms or stacks of platforms like Microsoft's trying to do with Windows and phone and tablet and so forth. Wait, what was I going to say? Oh, it was that if this does become popular, I think it will be not because it's remotely rendering and streaming as a video stream back to you over your internet connection. I think that's going to be the thing that hurts it. The thing that would make it take off would be the pricing model, the subscription model to an unlimited database, virtually unlimited, of games for a low monthly fee. If that starts to gain traction, I would expect to see Nintendo and Microsoft. And I don't know, I've never owned a PlayStation in recent years, so I don't know what their online catalog is like or purchasing situation, but just thinking about the Wii titles, I mean, I was just thinking randomly the other day how, you know, they're selling Nintendo, like NES, like the original games from the 80s for like $10 a piece. It's like, give me a break. That's like 30 kilobytes of data. They should make that into a subscription, because I'm sure that if people could play any catalog of games, you get people paying every month and just like trying stuff for 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, rather than paying $100 for like a handful of games you had as a child. I think that's not a very good business model, and I would expect Xbox and others would do a similar thing if that one-size-fits-all subscription becomes popular.
I think it's funny that you're saying Sony and Nintendo, because both of those are so tied up in their own parochial little ways. I can't see them ever doing that. Maybe Microsoft and the PC gaming platform, maybe, but Nintendo and Sony, they take some persuasion.
And not Microsoft. I'm surprised you'd say that.
Oh, no, Microsoft have a platform, games license, makes sense.
Your audio cut out, but I think were you saying like that Microsoft is inherently more cloud-based?
Well, no, it's more that Nintendo licenses every game they produce.
Right, right.
There's a question in the chat room, Eric, for you about how does that impact on the fact that Nintendo is actually a very conservative corporation, though, from what you,
that
you
was
know,
my point,
against what you're saying.
Okay. So what I mean is, I think what we're agreeing is the coolest thing about OnLive, the coolest tangible permanent thing, right? Because the gameplay, is it comparable to a local system? That depends on your connection, depends on where you are, depends on your device and your Wi-Fi and on and on and on. So that's the big independent variable. But the constant is the catalog of games for a low monthly fee, that Netflix streaming model, right? So my point was the lack, the latency, the performance, the graphics, that will always hold it back because that will only work in people with the top, in like the top 1% of bandwidth households, right? So if that model gets a foothold, you've then, I think before OnLive would ever, before, I think this is their tragedy, I think, before OnLive could ever grow a big enough fan base, a user base to genuinely compete with set-top game consoles like PlayStation and Xbox and Wii, before that would happen, you'd get the other guys opening the floodgate and do an unlimited all-you-can-eat subscription for their extensive, extensive back catalogs, which dwarf what OnLive has.
Well, I would contest that 100% for the point of view that, one, the latency and the speeds are only going to get better, and Sony and Nintendo are only going to get worse.
But there's another problem, isn't there? It's bandwidth caps.
Bandwidth caps.
I've been trying
caps,
to search how much bandwidth you actually need to be able to play. What's a lot, though?
Well, if you imagine it's at minimum, you should be able to stream a 720p, 60 frames per second uninterrupted stream. So you have to imagine that's quite a bit. I think I've played it for a while, but I think the last time I fired it up, it was like, over like 12 megabits consistently.
12, bloody hell.
Well, I mean, I was just thinking, hang on, how much OnLive capacity or activity is cloud-based versus local-based? So
it's all cloud-based, every single bit.
But you don't get any files downstairs
nothing.
Everything's in the web.
Just a single thin client.
But, I mean, that doesn't matter so much then, because actually what you're streaming is not... You're only streaming pixels on the screen. You're not streaming interaction.
Yes, that's exactly the point. You're streaming the pixels on the screen. Therefore, you need to do it bloody quickly with as little delay as possible.
Mm.
Yeah, I think you're a little bit wrong there. I think you're picturing it's like a multiplayer game where everything that you're doing is local, but you're watching the interactions of people from the server. That's not the case here. With OnLive, every control, every movement of that analog stick has to be sent to OnLive and back to your device, rendered in the video stream.
Yes. No, I understand that based on your answer to my first question. But what I'm saying is, if you look at the video demand for the stream, are you really taking 720?
Yes.
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 And you can tell. Says,
right, okay.
It says minimum.
Why would you be taking 720 to a device that can't stream 720?
It's minimum is 1024 by 576, so it's standard television. But it says 2 megabits a second minimum, 5+ megabits per second recommended.
Yeah, it's gigabytes a night.
And remember that.
Absolutely.
And the thing I keep reminding is that, you know, the recommended bandwidth still is not exactly on par with a local Xbox system connected to a good HD TV. Because even then, on the best case scenario, you're still getting pixelation, the type that you see on a any kind of H.264, you know, macro blocking.
The fans are so much quieter.
It is the way to go, though, isn't it?
You don't need to keep upgrading your graphics card, do you?
Yeah, 2 to 3 years' time, we will not be having a box in underneath your telly to play the game that you want to play. You will just be interacting with the cloud to play that game directly.
The
bandwidth
the
speeds will deliver.
Mm.
Yep. And I see Nintendo and Sony being lagging far behind on that because they're reliant on their hardware.
What's their business?
You see, now this is a really good question. I hope because I don't usually ask them. But my point would be about looking at PlayStation. I think in terms of innovation, changes in user interaction and that kind of stuff, I think PlayStation is a long, long way behind at the moment. Mm-hmm. They haven't got Kinect. They haven't got the Wii controller. The Move is an absolute dog sometimes to play with. But the one thing that they have got is they've got a very powerful machine, which means that you get very good gameplay, very good graphics rendering. From what I understand, the capabilities of the PS3 are tapped to about 60 or 70% at most. There's an awful lot more processing power and graphics power in there that can be used, and is untapped. And do people buy it for the Wii controller? Do they buy it for the Move? Do they buy it for Kinect? Or do they buy it for the gameplay? And I've got to say, I'm someone who spends probably about £40 or £50 a month on games. So I'm not a huge gamer, but I do it for the gameplay.
Which one do you have? Which system?
I've got a PS3 in the lounge where Ellis sits and plays it, and I play it as well. And in my office in here, it's just mine. I've got an Xbox 360.
But the point is, actually, I was going to say very quickly, the point is, people bought the PlayStation 3 because it was the most effective way to get a Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
That's no longer the case. All right, so you play some amazing games, but I can't see that. I think that's technology.
You know an indication of times have changed? When the PlayStation 3 used to be the cheapest Blu-ray player at like $400 in 2006. Now, maybe it was like $500 or $600, I think. Now, just 2 days ago, I took my car into a Midas service station. That's one of those big national chains, right? In there, for an oil change, $25 oil change. In their lobby is an HD TV with a Blu-ray player.
Yep.
Mm.
Oh, you can buy Blu-ray, for next to nothing, $20 or, yeah.
For the $25 oil change, and they got you can sit and watch a Blu-ray. I mean, that's bizarre, right? But I was going to say, Ewan, what you were saying about untapped power, the interesting thing is that when you see those comparisons between what an Xbox 360 game looks like, when they do one of those split screen side-by-sides, a lot of game review sites do this, they put the Xbox, I'm always surprised at how little difference there is, because I heard back then, that the PlayStation 3 was significantly more powerful. I don't really think we're seeing that potential being tapped. But what compared to the Xbox? But what does surprise me, consistently surprises me, and more so in this console generation than ever before, is how much better the graphics get over the life of the device. Here, the Xbox 360 has been around since November 2005, and still the graphics are on par with the latest PC hardware. The latest PC hardware, which has been evolving continuously throughout these almost 10-year period. And still, when you get a game like Crysis 2 or Modern Warfare 3, they hold it up side by side, and I'll be darned, the graphics are shockingly on par with the best PC hardware. I don't know how they do that,
This is the hilarious thing, Eric. You've got people who are dedicated to developing, just wringing out every last MIP of these graphics processors, and then HP are going, do you want to do something with our operating system? Where's the glory?
If I was Sony or Nintendo or even the Xbox team, I would be working exceptionally hard to work out how they are going to conquer on live. It's going to take over from selling hardware boxes. Your point about that we're using 2005 hardware now showing the best games, that's because the software is taking account of the way the machine works. If you take it forward in time, we won't be having machines that will be done.
I think you've got to be careful with that, because I think you might be right in terms of the fact that the manufacturers are going to take that privilege away from us. But in terms of the desire to move to that system, you won't find it in this place. I mean, I like having a rack of games that I go and play when I want, and not having to rely on whether I'm connected to the internet or not. Virgin Media craps out. Oh, well, I can't do any work today. I can still play on my Xbox. All of that disappears with your internet connection. And I'm not sure, especially you look at the BT stuff, there's people out there. I've got a guy who's a customer who's on 20 megabits a second. That's what he pays for. But because of his distance from the local exchange, BT have said to him, well, we can't actually provide you with guaranteed more than 8. Well, why am I paying 20 then? And actually, when I did a speed test, the dude's getting 2.1. There is, from the BT viewpoint, there is a significant number of people in the UK who can dream of 5. I get 6.8 out of my bloody MiFi sat here in the office if I need to as a backup.
Most people's connection, and in order to get a consistent 5, you still have to have, like I do, like a 16, and then you get 5 consistently if you're lucky, right?
Yeah, at 6 a.m.
Yeah, I would agree with Steve in as an idealist that I think that this model is the future. I think we're moving to a cloud future, you know, where the heavy lifting is done in a server and then streamed back to you via some mechanism. But I'm very pessimistic on this particular point because we're using 2005 hardware, which is still coming out much better, much more responsive, much higher resolution and crisper than this new technology, a new technology which only like the top one, maybe 10% of households can even access with their bandwidth.
Absolutely, yeah. And we've got to be, it's going to be interesting to find out what Sony and Microsoft's next trick is.
Said stutter boy.
Sorry.
It's all right, mate. illustrating the point of bandwidth connection easily.
Yeah.
I've got a new OnLive and I'll do it over Wi-Fi. Hell no, you won't.
But it's early days though, isn't it, for people like OnLive? I mean, the speeds are going to get faster and faster and faster, and data's going to get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
I think that's the key part though, David, is if you look at the OnLive business model, they would have launched at a point that they would have perceived that the market would be able to cope with the data load that they provided. And if that market doesn't catch up to the data load that they require, they will go out of business by default. When actually, if they'd have launched 18 months later, they would have been a thriving corporation. That's the key part.
I think also we are totally reliant on our ISPs and our governments putting the money into developing the networks. And I think fairly poor decisions are being made.
Well, I've got a real problem with this, James, because if you look at BT, the amount that they've creamed off for £145 a time for reconnecting lines, new customer lines are £145.
Where are they investing it?
Quarters. Where's the money going in investment when they're bleating and complaining about distances from connections from network servers and termination points at exchanges? And the government is now handing out £100 to £500 million to improve and give super high speed broadband to these inner cities.
Exactly.
And I'm sorry, guys, you lay the fibre, I'll buy the service. You don't lay the fibre, I won't buy the service. Don't look to my government to take the money out of my pocket via the back door so that you can charge me more. Eric, right, you've got a point.
Right. I do. I'd like to throw in, now that we're talking about bandwidth and stuff, have you guys heard about the potentially very bad thing that happened this week in the U.S. with Verizon?
No,
someone's trying to steal the copper.
Well, so what's happening is, and this really scares me, and I don't think most people have picked up on this yet, because I think people are too quick to listen to the marketing spin. I saw a lot of people say, you know, Verizon revolutionizes home entertainment. It's like, no, they don't. That's what they're saying. But the reality is they have reached an agreement. Verizon, which is primarily a phone and wireless company, with the cable companies, who obviously are trade in copper and fiber in the ground as opposed to wireless signals. They sort of like two mafia groups, families, have divided the town in two. Verizon has said, we will get out of the TV business. They're going to and wired business. You may know that Verizon, you've probably heard of Verizon Fios, super fast fiber to the home service was rolled out. They kind of stopped a few years ago in the US. So only a small number of cities have this. The ones who do love it. It's so cheap. It's so fast of internet and cable channels, and it's so cheap. Everyone loves Fios. Who wouldn't like fiber to the home? But they stopped it, and now we know why. They've made a deal now. They bought wireless spectrum that Comcast, Time Warner, Bright House, and I believe some other cable company had been sitting on that they purchased in a 2002 auction from the FCC and done nothing with it. That was the cable companies hedging their bets, thinking that they might start a mobile service if mobile communications becomes more popular than wired. So Verizon now has said, okay, we'll stop building out our fiber to the home service and stop offering that cable TV and internet service if you guys stop your wireless plan. They've also agreed to a joint venture or agreement where Verizon wireless services will be sold in the brick and mortar offices of Comcast, Time Warner, and the other cable guys. And in exchange, their cable services will be sold in Verizon wireless stores.
That's competition averse. I mean, that is consortium-based monopolistic behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. And so are they allowed to do that?
I hear that, well, technically they have been. I mean, they weren't, I don't believe that this was, I don't think anyone stepped in. I don't think they technically, well, I've heard that there are now the beginnings of some antitrust investigation, but in this country that might easily turn into nothing. But I hope it turns into a big something. Kind of Verizon is the largest owner of high quality spectrum now in the United States. They own almost all of the 700 megahertz stuff, or at least half of it, compared to AT&T's. So if you imagine how the most robust signals in the electromagnetic spectrum is around that 700 megahertz band, right? That's the one that can penetrate walls, go into basements. That's your over-the-air television, your VHF. That's the high quality stuff. All that stuff, all broadcast TV over, you know, that we've known since the 50s is now under ownership now, those airwaves, almost exclusively Verizon and AT&T. That's scary.
That does sound like, David's typed in the chat room, cartel. Absolutely right. Yeah. It does seem it, most definitely.
Is that not making big news then? Is that, you said you're concerned about it. Is that because other people may not be, from your view?
You know, I don't know what the reason is. Some people speculate that it's a conspiracy because the media companies are all tied in with each other. So there are like five companies that do everything nowadays for any industry. And so they're all, they have clear agreements or reasons not to, attack one another's business like that in the press. Or it could be that it's just too esoteric an issue that people don't understand the importance of it. Because just as a general rule, broadband and wireless competition, basically we're talking just communication services, have been mega consolidated and have gone up in huge price over the last few decades. And really no one in this country has even cared.
Mm. Amazing.
Cheers. Cool. We've had some good discussions there, chaps.
The cable guys will, in 4 years' time, according to this agreement or press release, will start selling wireless service, like you're going to have like your Comcast wireless phone service, which is actually just a wholesale rebranding of Verizon wireless phone service.
Right. Which doesn't sound good either.
Yeah.
Definitely not. Cool. This podcast and many others that are on the network would not be possible without UK2.net. They're the people that keep us afloat, and we are totally, totally incumbent to them for our bandwidth. We sap them a huge amount every month, and we've got a little gauge, and the gauge is always on zero because we've got an infinite supply of bandwidth from them. No matter what we do, they will pick it up as long as we just keep promoting them and our listeners, you, keep supporting them. If you need it, don't just go and buy anything just for the sake of it each month and as an investment in the network. If you've got that kind of money, give it to us. But please, if you're buying a web domain, then go to uk2.net, go to our website, bageltechnews.com, click on the link that takes you through. They'll know we sent you. Use the offer code BAGELTECH, you get 15% off. Use the offer code BAGELDNS, and if you transfer a domain in, the domain management charge disappears entirely. Please support UK2, because if you don't support them, they won't support us, and if they don't support us, we are absolutely tanked. We're in a horrific position because it's all we can do to survive with them. Thank you very much, UK2. We mean a lot to us. Have we got cool thingies, chaps? James, do you want to stutter us through a cool thing?
I will struggle through. I've been using speedtest.net on my on various devices to find out how crap my internet connection is. And a lot of the time, it's okay. If you've got... Am I still there?
Fine.
If you've got the iPhone app and you do a speedtest.net, drag the screen vertically down and a little cat appears. And every time you do it, something different happens. It's just a weird Easter egg on it that I just noticed. So the test.net iPhone app. So for the sheer stupidity of the little thing it's got in the background, it's cool. That's my silly thingy.
Your silly thing, good.
It's nearly Christmas. And we're gentlemen. We're gentlemen of the world. And I think we need pocket watches. And I've just posted a link to a fantastically gorgeous-looking pocket watch in the chat room. It's made by Tokyo Flash. It's LCD. It glows. It doesn't tell the time properly. It's everything you could ever want from a geeky pocket watch.
Buy a watch, it doesn't tell the time properly. Well done,
mate. It does. You've just got to learn how to tell the time with it. That's pretty cool, right?
It does look good. I grant you that, most definitely.
And for £100, it's a really nice present for your wife to get you.
And only for £100, I'll tell the wife, mate. She'll be happy as Larry.
Do you guys remember internet time from the? I think from around the turn of the century.
They only made, as far as I can see, they only made one watch, made an internet watch, and I want one.
I remember it because it was on
anywhere.
It was on the homepage of Apple, I think, for a few months, and it was like it divided. It made sense. It turned time into basically the metric system instead of having a basis of 30 and 60. It turned it into even tens and thousands. So it, instead of minutes, or rather instead of seconds, you had beats, and it was like 100 beats to a second or something. So I kind of wish
1,000 beats to the day.
I tell you what, that is definitely the separation between the generations. He says it was happened around the turn of the century. He thinks of 10 years back, and I'm thinking of the Victorian era. Absolutely,
I knew when I said it, but Ewan, how would internet time have been in the progressive
exactly?
Era?
No. What I'm saying is that's the separation of the generations as an explanation right there. It's exactly it, mate. I'm a dinosaur. You're not. There we go. I think it's a good pick, James. Well done, mate.
Thank you.
Steve, what have you got for us, pal?
A quick update.
Oh, Jesus.
Is it the candles?
It's the candles.
My wife has publicly said, does not like these candles. However, the mother-in-law loves them. And it led to me getting the mother-in-law drunk this week. That's how good my week has been.
You want to be
celebrating how good these candles were.
Very good, mate. We're right behind you.
That's the update on the candles. But my pick this week is an app I really want to recommend, but I need to credit Kevin because he recommended it to me. It's called Downcast. And if you listen to podcasts, as you're listening to this podcast, I couldn't use the iPhone without this app. Basically, what it does is automatically sync down new episodes of whatever podcasts you want when they're available. You can tell it to check every hour, every 5 hours. You can tell it to download podcasts only from wireless, download podcasts from 3G as well. You can set it to play playlists automatically. So one podcast after the other. It's also got touch controls. So if you're using it in a car, you can swipe it left or forward, swipe it back or reverse it, and it's now been updated this week with iCloud syncing. So if you have an iPad and a iPhone or a number of devices, it will automatically detect when you've listened to an episode of a particular podcast on another device and therefore delete it for you in accordance to the rules that you set up on all your devices. You can also set it to delete or only have one episode, two episodes unlistened to. It's absolutely brilliant for listening to podcasts, and it's called Downcast.
And it's completely makes iTunes podcasts redundant, right? Oh,
absolutely. You will never go back.
You don't need your PC or Mac to download them. It's great.
Yeah. I really need one of those for my Android phone.
Excellent.
Stitcher, is it? Is that one for Android?
It doesn't look as good as that.
No, it doesn't.
Bad luck, mate.
The updates are brilliant as well. They're often, and it's always a good update. Mm.
Mm.
Cool. David, what have you got for us, mate?
An Android app. First time ever on the show, I think. And it's called Radar Droid. And it's a speed camera alert system.
Right.
So you download the app. You download a database of the 10,000 speed cameras in the UK. And you can do it in the US as well, mm-hmm. if you're driving in the US. And it voice alerts you and puts a warning on your phone screen when you're approaching a speed camera to warn you to slow down. Simple as that.
Very good.
Mobile cameras, traffic cameras.
Did you say a price?
It's free for the light version with ads, or $4.99 for the pro version.
As long as the ads don't kick in when just you're coming up to a speed camera. But...
it's only a little stripe across the top.
You stuck a link in the chat room?
I have indeed.
Good man.
Fantastic. Going for that.
Eric, what have you got for us, pal? Your browser add-on extension.
Yes, my big extension for the day. This is a late-breaking cool thing. Yeah, I just found it this morning from a deliberate web search. So I have to... the caveat is I don't know if this is the best thing to do what it does, but at least for Safari, it's the only thing that I could find. But it is for all browsers. It's for Safari, Firefox, and Chrome, so the main three. And it's called... The Tractor, spelled T-R-A-C-K-T-O-R, and it tracks the prices on Amazon.com products. It adds a nicely rendered little graph in either 3, 6, 3 month or 6 month increments, or 1 year or the lifetime of the product. And you can track the price of Amazon products right there in the page. You don't have to go to a separate page. You don't have to copy and paste anything. It just happens totally automatically. Right underneath the price, you get a big wide graph that you can see. The thing that brought me to looking for something like this is because I've needed hard drives for a while. I missed the boat hugely by not buying them back in October, because now they more than doubled in price. And I was concerned. I haven't been tracking the prices, so I don't know if they've actually been increasing, decreasing. I didn't know what was happening with them.
Nothing.
So
they're where they were.
Yeah. Well, now I know that for sure, because I've been able to see the graph. So it's a cool little thing, as befitting for this segment of cool thingies. So that's it. It's at, let me give the URL. I think it's I just closed the window. I think it is, here it is, thetractor.com, TRACKTOR.
Jolly good. Excellent.
Did you say a bit slower, please, Ewan?
Thetractor.com.
TRERIKLANI.
I keep getting farm machinery.
TRACK.
There it is, yeah. CK.
There we go. Excellent. Good pick. Good pick. Before I do my picks, literally just popped up, there is a released document from the US government, and it goes back to 1952. It's had a 50-year secrecy order on it, and it's a picture of a nuclear explosion test that occurred in Nevada in 1952, and it's just been released 10 minutes back. There you go. And that's it. And that is a nuclear explosion 1 millisecond after detonation.
And why is that classified, or was?
I guess it was classified. There you go. But
or why? I mean, what is that? They don't want that photo getting into the wrong hands. I mean, what is their justification for classifying that?
I just think it's a cool photo.
Oh, it is. It is.
Super cool. That's what it looks like 1 millionth of a second after a nuclear detonation. And if you look at the scale of that with the mountains on the bottom there, that's... That's an awful lot of movement in a millisecond, isn't it?
It is.
Huge amount. I've got two things to pick, to be honest. The first one was Alex Fox. He decided today to... We did a thing on the photo show, which was basically, here's the things that we'd suggest you can buy for Christmas as presents and that kind of stuff. And me and Chris Forsman, I stuck to cameras. Chris Forsman opted out because he'd forgotten. And Alex came up with a series of stuff that wasn't camera-based. And one of the things that came out was the Hammer Allen Pod walking stick with a monopod for DSLR cameras. And based on the fact he's going out on a photo walk tomorrow with you, Steve, and yep, with Carl as well, this thing, if you look at it on its side, looks like a gun. So yep, when you're in sensitive areas taking a picture, dear, and someone approaches you with Alex with this on his monopod with his camera on the top, don't be surprised, mate, if you get lifted. And also,
is he actually taking that?
You could, I mean, based on the way it looks, you could be subject to cavity search. That's all I want to say. Be careful. Keep a safe distance from Alex tomorrow if he's got this with him. He's ordered it today. He was looking for it, and as soon as he saw it, he ordered it. So it may actually arrive because it's on Amazon Prime. He may get it first thing in the morning. So,
oh, excellent.
If he's got it, steer clear of him. But my pick was the Behringer Dock. And the Behringer Dock is something rather special because it's actually a dock for your iPhone that's $30,000.
It's got the iPhone on top of it. It's tiny.
That's an iPhone on top of it.
What?
It's hugely expensive. And the reason it's hugely expensive is because of the power output of it. This thing apparently is an iPhone dock that weighs 700 pounds. It's 4 foot tall and 8 foot wide. It costs $29,999 if you want to buy one. And it's got a ridiculous output volume. I did find an article that's got the wattage on it, but 10,000 watts. There we go.
Have you seen a video of that in real life?
10,000 watts power output. It's a real device. It's not a joke. It's manufactured.
I'm looking for the words April Fools.
No, it's a real device. Behringer have got it. It is available, but the only place you'll be able to see it is at their CES booth next month.
I can beat that, Ewan.
Go on.
There's one that's $500,000 and you need a ladder for it.
Ah, that's the Jean-Michel Jarre one, isn't it? That's a cylinder of like full of watery type looking stuff. Yeah, this thing looks like it's
Behringer. Behringer makes cheap hi-fi, but a cheap studio kit.
Well, not anymore.
I've got a Behringer keyboard, I think, a cheap one.
I've got a Behringer mixer. You're all talking through it at the minute, but and it is fairly cheap.
I do too. I knew that name sounded familiar.
Yeah. But there you go. That's it. It's 4 foot tall and 8 feet wide. It's the Behringer 10,000 watt iPhone dock.
Perfect as an alarm clock replacement next to your bed.
It is good. And I also said today,
I've
just bought an iPad dock and I was absolutely distraught today to find out that Griffin have bought out a dual charger for an iPad and an iPhone, and it's even got a little divot in it so you can put your coins and your keys in it.
Got a link to that, Ewan.
Bitch.
That's nice thinking.
It was on the feeds today. I was gutted, absolutely gutted, because it's just
because I've just bought it. Griffin do make good stuff, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. It is good.
What's the iPad dock? What's it called?
It's Griffin dual dock.
No, the big one.
The big one. It's a Behringer. It's just a Behringer iPhone dock.
The
iNuke Boom. There we go.
iNuke. Put it into iTractor. Boom. Let's track the price.
Track the price. I don't think you're going to get the price.
Oh, I've just bought myself a Griffin dock.
It's a dual one. Have you got the two on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
I hate you now, Dish. You're not coming on again, Dean. Exactly. Good price as well. You're not coming back on again. Stuff off. 29 quid. It was $59. So that should be 40 quid.
It's 29 quid on Amazon.co.uk.
I hate you even more now, you bastard.
Nice.
Carl, you're in the chat room. Make sure he doesn't come on again, eh?
Are you Verizon with your cartel type?
Absolutely.
It says it's out of stock on Griffin's store.
But now it is.
It's out of stock on Amazon now as well. We broke it. Right. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hart?
If we can sustain my broadband for long enough, on Twitter, SYZYGY.
You fix that wired system up, mate, before next time.
Do me best. Do me best. I'm trying.
Steve, where can we get you, mate?
You can find me tomorrow freezing, shivering, and vibrating
Lost.
And pressing a shutter far too much, probably.
With a policeman's finger up your arse, looking for...
It is Victoria
looking for
Park.
Canisters of film.
Well, I'll be standing next to Alex as he gets arrested with his gun.
Shooting stick, in more ways than one.
Yeah, it's Victoria Park, Westminster. I think it's 2 o'clock, it might be half two, but it's on the Elmwood website. Which is what I help out with, which is London Back User Group.
Good man. If you're in and around London, take the journey in for it's every first Monday.
Yes, I'm doing the pub quiz on Monday night. I haven't started it yet, but yeah. I'm doing our special pub quiz on Monday night.
Good bunch of
free
people.
Free food as well for everyone who comes who's a member.
Jolly good.
Yeah, good night on Monday night.
Come so in. Go and join. And there is good food there, isn't it? The Thai food out of that place is beautiful, and the beer's all right as well.
Mm. Indeed.
David, where can we get you, mate?
In the kitchen at parties.
Great song.
And I confess I'm a geek.
And Twitter at I confess I'm a geek.
There we go. And last but by no means least, Mr. Lanigan.
At ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, ericlanigan.
Good man. Last thing to say before we suddenly disappear is that we've got a Christmas giveaway, and it's a good special one. It's really, really nice. We're talking about rummaging in Santa's sack, and what we're going to do is have a rummage in Santa's sack, and someone is going to win the prizes that we've got to give away. And we've got a good old list of prizes. We've got a 1 terabyte drive for your laptop, a little 2.5 drive. It fits in all the new MacBook Pros. Exactly. We got it when it was nice and cheap, but it's actually now worth a fortune. No flood damage. It's been sat here in my bag for ages waiting for Christmas to give it away. Very kindly donated by Carl. We've also got 3 licenses for Snagit to give away on the 23rd, and we've got 3 licenses for Camtasia 2 to give away, which has just been released this week, and we're giving those away on the 23rd as well. And we may have a Nintendo 3DS from UK2 to give away as well. So we've got a big bunch of prizes there, and all you've got to do is enter by sending us an email that says I want to rummage in Santa's sack, and when you get your email to us, we'll put it in Santa's sack, and we'll have a rummage in Santa's sack all the way through the day as we do all the shows. And if we whip your name out, whatever we rip out, you're going to win that prize. There you go. Simple as that. And do bother to claim it, because Amanda, who won the Nintendo 3DS in the summer through to autumn, hasn't claimed it yet. Silly bird. So we might have another one of those. We'll have to wait and see. There we go. Right. We'll see you next week for another big show. We're still... Are we Thursday next week or Friday? We're Friday still, aren't we?
Friday, I think, yeah.
Yeah, we're still Friday next week. So Friday again. And we might move the other one to Friday if it suits everyone, just because it's... did the whole thing and it's Christmas and it's 23rd and we'll all be pished because no one will be going back to work on Saturday morning or anything.
Is it Christmas next week? It's week after.
Week after.
Yeah.
See you then. Thanks for listening.